Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpoga. This evening, we'll talk about the Egyptian elections. And with us tonight is Professor Walid Farez. He's an advisor to the U.S. House of Representatives on Middle Eastern issues. He's also the author of The Coming Revolution, and his new book, The Lost Spring, is now on sale. Good afternoon, Dr. Farez.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me today, Doctor.
You're welcome. And joining us from South Africa is another regular panelist and friend of the show, Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from the Durban. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Gentlemen, once again, welcome to the program. And as I said, tonight we're going to talk about the Egyptian elections. Former Egyptian army chief Abdel Fattah al-Sisi won a landslide victory in the presidential election Thursday, but a low turnout threatened to deprive him of the strong mandate he needs to fix the economy and face down an Islamist insurgency. Sisi won 93.3% of votes cast, that's according to judicial sources, with most ballots counted after 3 days of voting. His only rival, leftist politician Hamdin Sabahi, gained 3%, while 3.7% of votes were declared void. So let's start from there, beginning with Professor Farez here in Washington. Your general impression of this process?
Well, the general impression is that Egypt has gone, from a very tough time. That is a popular uprising against Mr. Morsi, President Morsi, back in June, with millions of people walking on the streets, to an interim government, which was headed by civilians, but of course backed by the military, to a more serious step, which was actually the referendum, where you got 22.5 million people participating, and now the presidential election with 24 million. Now, I am not sure that this is a low turnout compared to other presidential elections, but maybe people are comparing this to the number of people who have been in a demonstration, 33 million, according to BBC, past due. But the bottom line now is that Egypt has an elected president, and the conditions to determine what will be the future of Egypt will be what this president and his government do. And keep in mind, Douglas, that there's still another important election. I have been making the case that the parliamentary elections of Egypt are going to be, if not as, maybe more important than the presidential, because then you're going to see the political map, how many political parties, if the Salafi Islamists are going to be part of it. And then we could measure if Egypt is on the right track at this point in time.
Suleiman, Dr. Farez refers to the turnout. It's expected to be around 46%. This is far lower than what Mr. Sisi was hoping for. Does that take away anything from his legitimacy?
I don't think so. Yes, there is some. It depends on how one looks at it. But I think by and large, regardless of it being 46% compared to the 52% turnout which brought Morsi to office, but comparatively you find it's a bigger turnout because Morsi won by 13 million votes, Sisi is winning by 23 million votes. So comparatively, as Prof has said, we cannot say it is a low turnout. Comparatively, it is a good turnout, regardless of the methods used to get it. But by and large, at least the Egyptians have been able to bring a comparatively legitimate government into action. We should know where they come from. We should applaud the Egyptians. The Egyptians are coming from a very difficult situation. Remember, Douglas, all post-dictatorial nations are very delicate and very difficult to handle. From the French Revolution to the so many revolutions which have taken place in Africa and elsewhere, a post-dictatorial regime is so difficult, if not well handled, sometimes it ends up into a total collapse of the nation. By the fact that the Egyptians have been able to avoid that scenario, we should be positive and we should really commend them for the act which they have done, especially those who have gone to the polling stations to vote.
I see. How about Professor Fares, the report that some Islamists and some secular groups boycotting this vote, does that mean anything?
Yes, it does. It means that there is going to be a extra off-system opposition, and it means that they're going to be in-system opposition. To me, what is important is that the armed violence would stop, regardless of the political process, that the jihadists or al-Qaeda-linked groups in the Sinai will be taken care of. But inside Egypt, along the Nile River, the hope is that many of those who are doing violence now would be convinced that they should prepare themselves to enter the political process. And as Mr. Suleiman has said, and he knows, I mean, he represents a country, comes from a country that went through very difficult times, that many of those who are demonstrating with violence, including from the Muslim Brotherhood, will decide to move and become an opposition and then address the legislative election. Now, of course, there are some liberal groups, some secular groups, April 6th movement splinters, who have been opposing this government and will be opposing this president. This is healthy. It is good that there will be an opposition. And in many countries, some opposition sometimes decide not to vote. Remember, in our American elections, you had so many people who didn't even decide to vote for the opposition leader, Mr. Romney, last time because they didn't believe in some of his views, or for Mr. Clinton in the past. So we have to make a distinction from now on between those who choose the path of violence, and there should be a consensus against them, and then those who choose the path of political opposition and let it be.
Suleiman, following up on his point there, for there to be a viable opposition, there ought to be space for the political opposition to organize and put across their ideas. Is this space going to be available, in your opinion?
Hopefully, because the instruments of the revolution, the tools of the revolution, are still at large. What has happened in Egypt is to choose between the lesser of the two evils. What was the alternative? The alternative was either to get a step-by-step movement towards the proper democratization. If it was a patient, we would say this: the Sisi regime is supposed to be stabilizing the patient before a proper diagnosis and proper treatment is given to that particular patient. So, yes, it may look a little bit bleak at the moment, but the alternative was worse. If it was being left without getting Sisi's regime in power, then it means we have to go the Libyan style, where we have total chaos. So, devoid of that one, therefore, regardless of the small space that might be available, but we hope the larger step, yes, Sisi, in all his campaign, he has shown that he may not be compromising much, because he said this is a time to have a consolidation, this is a time to have some form of cohesion. Yes, the space may not be as big as we want it to be, but we hope he will not lock the door and put the key to democracy.
I want to jump in, Professor Fares, on that aspect of political space for the opposition.
Look, the opposition in Egypt has been mutating. Look at what happened in 2011. You had the first wave of the Arab Spring in Tahrir Square. The first one to hit, actually, it was not even the old opposition, the various political parties, the Wasp Party, and not even the Muslim Brotherhood. It was really the youth, and then followed by middle class, followed by workers, followed by women, by the Copts of Egypt. It all began with a social media event that was a Facebook, Masr Thawra Egypt Revolution. 85,000 likes started the Egyptian Revolution. Now, when that happened, the international community protected the civil society move, and then the Muslim Brotherhood and the other political parties moved in. So I am confident that if there is any attempt by the next government, should it be the president, the cabinet, or other agencies, if they want to bring Egypt back to any form of authoritarianism, Tahrir Square is there. Now the Egyptian people have completely changed with social media, with international connections. They will not allow a going backward. But, of course, at the same time, they want stability, they want food, they want jobs. So, as it was mentioned in the debate now, the priority now is security, stability, and is economic enhancement. And at the same time, we need to make sure that democracy and freedom and pluralism will move forward. It's like a big process with many moving components, and we need to help them. as international community to move forward. And I know that the Egyptian army itself, the armed forces, they know that the era of military coup is over in Latin America and Africa and elsewhere. And they're part of the, this is a big army, part of the people. And they know that their children and the children of their children would like to have jobs and opportunities and not violence anymore.
Further to that point, how crucial was the army in this election?
Look, the army couldn't have... I followed it very closely. I remember you and I discussed my book, The Coming Revolution, even before it happened in Egypt. The army in Egypt is the backbone of all institutions, has been the case for a long time. But when they saw that there is a marching popular majority last June marching, they supported it. An army alone, General Sisi or other, couldn't have done what they have done without this ocean of people, 33 million. Remember, 1 year under Mr. Morsi, and the army didn't do anything. They followed his orders strictly. But when they saw a massive recall process in Egypt happening, it's afterwards that they have supported, and nevertheless, they called for a referendum. No army would call for a referendum if they intend on establishing an authoritarian regime. So they want to be protected by the political process, and of course they want to try to maintain their privileges, but that's another discussion.
I see. Suleiman, there are people, other analysts who have said the way the Egyptian army is set up with a lot of interest in economic and other issues, it's part of sort of merged into the political system. Do you...
Yes, the way Professor has put it, it is the principal member in the structure of the Egyptian nation. You cannot do without it. If you are to touch it, then you break the whole nation. But thank God, they have played their cards very well, the way Prof has said. They have been they are known to be in the background. But even as of now, by the fact that Sisi has came up and took that step to save Egypt, it is still the military which is still influencing. That is why people are celebrating. They are celebrating because the military has been able to intervene at the right time when the Islamists were about to break the country into chaos.
Professor Fares, from somebody looking from afar and looking at Sisi coming to power today, and before that, of course, forgetting about Morsi, there was Mubarak, Hussein Mubarak, and before that, every leader has had to be an army general. Is this a healthy trend?
It could be. Look, as my colleague from Durban mentioned, we have to go country by country and see how these institutions play. In some countries, the parliament is the most important. In other countries, the labor union. If you look at Tunisia, for example, who is the hardcore supporter pillar of the labor union? And in many other countries, you have different types. In Egypt, the army is the stabilizing factor, but it is not the one-party system. So when I am asked, I don't think that Egypt is going to go back to another Morsi type of regime, but not even to a Mubarak. My sense is that the Egyptians have discovered their strength as a people, and they're going to move as independent as possible. They're going to maintain themselves as allies and friends of the United States, the international community, but they're going to start to choose in a clever way for themselves. I think Egypt will become now more of an India. They want to be independent. They want to choose with whom they're going to partner, but at the same time, they're going to maintain the democracy, the biggest democracy in the Arab world. India is the largest democracy in the world demographically. I project that Egypt will become the largest democracy that needs to be perfected. This is not the perfect one, but that's how I see it moving, away from all the models of the past, not there, Sadat, Mubarak, or even Morsi.
I see. Gentlemen, hold your thoughts. Let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of the Egyptian elections.
African Music Mix.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. North to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on the Voice of America.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from Washington. Our topic tonight is the Egyptian elections. Our panelists are Professor Walid Farez, an advisor to the U.S. House of Representatives on Middle East, and his new book, The Lost Spring, is now out. Suleiman Mugula is a South African-based independent political analyst and joining us from Durban. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Gentlemen, before I went for that short break, we were talking about how Sisi pulled off a very, overwhelming majority in the win. And Professor Farez had referred to the coming parliamentary elections. Now, as we know, Sisi doesn't have a political part of talk about. Do you think, let me begin here in Washington with Farez, do you think he can, whatever comes out of the parliamentary elections, will be able to give him the full support to be able to carry out whatever agenda he has?
Well, I think now the post-June Egypt, last June, is going to be different. It's going to be a parliament different than, of course, the one that was supporting Mubarak, whatever he wanted. That was a Mubarak parliament, or the one that supported Morsi, whatever he wanted. What we're going to see, I think, is a parliament where there will be a coalition majority, many political parties. Because remember, General Sisi, President Sisi to be, doesn't have a political party. Morsi had one. Mubarak had one. So that ensured that the institutions will move in one direction. Now, he will have to actually negotiate with a coalition of political parties. That's why one of the mechanisms I was mentioning, that Egypt has changed, and the army doesn't have a political party. So what you're going to have is a majority that would support his principles. The same majority that brought him to presidency is going to be a majority that would bring many political parties to parliament, and he will have to negotiate. That's why I think Egypt is going to be very different. It's not going to be a liberal democracy like the European old democracies yet, but it's moving in that direction.
I see. Suleiman, the stakes seems to be very high for Sisi in a country where street protests have helped topple two presidents in 3 years. Do you think he'll have has a balancing act to do here?
He has it too, because the way I agree with the prof, that Egypt might turn out to be a very strong democracy on the continent. Sisi and the dynamics, the social dynamics within Egypt show an incline towards a proper democracy, because as we have said, it does not have a political party. But the most important thing is that I think the Egyptians, and maybe some people on the continent, have learned from this experience of these dictators that dictatorship does not help. Dictatorship has got so many disadvantages, or that strong man in mentality has got so many disadvantages. Dictatorship kills national institutions. All institutions die with a dictator. Dictatorship kills talent. The dictators thrive on the intellectuals within our society. They compromise them, they kill them. As they go down with them. Dictatorship kills national values, the values of integrity, the ethics of a country goes. People become dictatorship. People lose their integrity. They become corrupt. Once the dictator falls, he goes with that one. Dictatorship kills national cohesion, because it exists through divide and rule. It creates factions. So once you try to be a dictator, you divide the nation. When you fall, the country, there is a vacuum in the country. Number five, dictatorship kills the national spirit. People cease to see their country as a country because they are marginalized, because they are broken into groups. So with all these ones combined together, Sisi himself together with the Egyptians, I believe they have seen what is happening on the continent, and the way Prof has said, they are likely, or Sisi is likely, to balance it up properly to ensure that a proper democratic system is established in Egypt, which we hope will be a model for other African and Arab countries.
Professor Fares, this government coming in is going to face a lot of hardships. And General Sisi, in the interviews he's been giving, he's been vague about how to solve some of these issues. For instance, he didn't present any plans to remedy the economy, the corruption, the high unemployment, widening budget. How tough do you think this job is going to be?
It is going to be very tough. That's the only thing we have a consensus on. Egypt, with this president or any other government, has deep structural problems inherited from decades and decades of corruption and many things. But at the same time, Sisi will be appealing his presidency, and hopefully the next parliament will be acting to promote a sort of a national stability. And remember that the Egyptians have a lot of businessmen, have a lot of businesses around the world, and they were waiting for a moment to go back. And many also in the region, including in the Arab world, will be very interested in investing in Egypt. So I am, on the one hand, very concerned about how fast can a Sisi presidency help Egypt. But on the other hand, I see a lot of resources coming. And as it was mentioned in the debate, Mr. Suleiman, that the continent as a whole needs to have those large democracies, of course, at the African level, coming from the south, from South Africa, and coming from the north, from the Arab side of the continent, being successful and encouraging middle-sized and smaller-sized democracies to move forward. I think Sisi's role is not going to be just, in Egypt. It's going to be also to send that message of hope around him, because south of him you have Sudan with all the problems. West of him, you have Libya with all the problems. So it is going to be very challenging for General or President Sisi.
Suleiman, you see, prior to this one, the others have been strong generals, and they could therefore execute their regional role or their foreign policy in a more masicular way, because they didn't have a strong parliament to oppose them. They didn't have to take into consideration public opinion local at home. If Sisi gets a parliament that is independent, and how easy is it going to be him to play his role in the region?
Sisi is the captain of the team. Given the current dynamics which we have in Egypt, I don't think he's going to take a unilateral stand, as you've said, to take that strongman character. Yes, it has been the tradition. Yes, but the dynamics have changed. So fast, he knows where he belongs. He has to conform together with the group which will get in parliament. The most important thing is that his work is cut out. At this material time, the way Prof has said, we need stability, we need to resuscitate the economy, we need to resuscitate tourism, we need to create opportunities for employment, we need to fight inflation. So long as he concentrates on that one as a kickoff, the way he has said, he wants to start a big project, he wants government intervention, he wants government to be the pivot, the center of all the activity. I mean, it wants to have a direct arm into resuscitating the economy. If he can succeed with the basics, then he will be able even to flex his muscle within the region. But the most important is to cater for the Egyptians on the ground who are now struggling with unemployment and poverty.
Waleed, talking of stability, as you know, the Islamist movement rejected the vote, today's vote, and one official calling it a theatrical play which did not convince anybody. How do you get that stability when you're contending with a strong Islamist force that is opposed to whatever is going on?
Look, the Islamist bloc that has rejected the elections is going to now have to deal with reality. See, they've done all that mobilization, and I understand why. They had the regime in their hands. They lost it. And they had a lot of funding and support and petrodollars, and they have been, you know, there for many, many decades. I think now the problem is going to be what they're going to do about it. Are they going to continue this urban guerrilla against a government that is moving forward? And they know now that there is a super popular majority, maybe not in support of Sisi, but certainly not willing to see them coming back. And besides, you have a faction of Islamists, the Salafists, the moderate Salafists in Egypt, who have demonstrated that they have been against the Brotherhood, that they have been with the political process, and they could be a place where non-satisfied Muslim Brotherhood members, after months and months of trying to block the process, they would go. I think also the third thing is that the Muslim Brotherhood is going to go through an internal crisis now. The younger elements are going to be attracted to the next parliamentary election because they realize that their party is not going to be able to come back by force, and therefore there may be major changes and maybe splinters among the Brotherhood themselves.
How about those who have argued that you have to, at some point, bring them on board? You can't simply crush them. You have to talk with them and maybe make them see the light and bring them on your side. Is that feasible?
We made that argument a while ago, and I personally went on Arab TV and made that call. Reform, and you'll be absorbed. See, you cannot absorb somebody who's against the democratic process. So what they may do themselves and realize that is that they're going to hold the Communist Party. It's like the Communist Party is moving into social democracy after the collapse of the Soviet Union. So in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood will realize that they need to come into a new convention. And if they do those reforms, I am pretty sure that Sisi and the next parliament will absorb them. Anybody who's not connected to violence will be absorbed, no doubt about it. So we're looking at a new political party of the Brotherhood, the one that would inherit them to be part of the new political process.
Yeah, Suleiman, in 10 seconds, it takes two to tango. Will both sides play ball?
I believe so. So long as one factor also is looked at, the external factor. I wish America and the European countries would give the Egyptian the room to reform their country, to solve their problems, whether with the Islamists and so on. Because the external factors, the Americans and the EUs, they are the ones who have been incubating dictators. They are the ones who have been feeling that it is better to have a dictator who makes the country stable than to create a democracy. So through their in trying to foster their interests, they have ended up disorganizing our countries. If they leave Egypt with Sisi and the parliamentarian and the people of Egypt on their own to sort out their problem,
yes,
I have the hope that Egypt will recover.
Well, gentlemen, we're out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Professor Waris Fares. He is an advisor to the U.S. House of Representatives on Middle East, and is also the author of The Coming Revolution. His new book, The Lost Spring, is now on sale. Thank you very much, Dr. Fares.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you, Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Suleiman, thanks as usual.
As always, you're welcome.
Yeah, and our producer has been Jackson Mufunganyo. Engineer tonight was Michael Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. In case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it if you go to our main website at www.voanews.com. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks so very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mpoga in Washington. Have a good evening.
La danse des magiciens.
Il faut te lever pour danser.